This is the January 27th, 2021 meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their packets available to them virtually, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. If a member is on their phone and doesn't have access to the raise your hand feature, please email Ms. Burt and she will put your question in the queue. This is the digital equivalent of getting the attention of the chair or the committee administrator. An email from your House account with the subject line, please recognize, is all that is required if you're on your phone. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Kreisha, present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels. I see him joining right now. Representative Daniels, we're just going through the roll.
Daniels, present. Thank you.
Perfect timing. Representative Damuth. Representative Damuth. Representative Drazkowski.
Drazkowski here.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott is excused. Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang.
Present.
Perfect. Representative Joachim.
Present.
And Representative Damuth.
Present.
Perfect. That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Juergens, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our meeting of yesterday?
Juergens or Jordan? Mr. Chair.
I said Juergens.
Chair Dabney, Juergens isn't on our committee.
Oh, really? Representative Jordan, then. My bad. What am I thinking? Have you had the opportunity to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. I believe Representative Juergens was on the committee last year.
He was. He was. 2 whole years of him on the committee.
But anyway, Mr. Chair, I have had a chance to review the minutes, and I move the minutes of January 26th for this committee.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Jordan motion? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Jordan, stepping in and catching that. Members. In your virtual packets today, you'll see a copy of the committee rules for the biennium. They've been updated to reflect our new virtual process. You'll see we have a standard 24-hour rule, as is common across committees. We continue to strive to provide OCR-compatible documents for the public. We'll tend towards voice votes for approving meeting minutes and amendments. But by all means, if someone would like to request a roll call, you will always be afforded that opportunity. Are there any questions or discussion about the committee rules for the biennium? Seeing none, fantastic. The committee administrator will post these to our committee website under permanent documents. As to today's agenda, members, this week we're examining the disruptions COVID has caused in our school communities. Today we'll be hearing from innovative school administrators and directors from around the state who have the gigantic task of supporting their students and staff during these very uncertain times. I'll hand it over to the experts, the professionals who are helping our school communities navigate these challenges and solutions. The first on my list is Superintendent Aston Osai from the St. Louis Park Schools. Superintendent, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Good morning, Chair Dagny and members of the House Education Finance Committee. My name is Aston Osai, and I'm honored to be with you. Thank you for allowing me and other leaders to testify today and just have a few minutes to share the impact of the pandemic on our organizations and student learning. Like most public school districts across the state, this year has been a roller coaster for us in St. Louis Park Public Schools. Since the start of the year, our students, families, and staff have experienced four shifts in educational delivery models as we started off in distance learning, moved to hybrid, went back to distance learning, and now are in-person learning for E2 students and will be in-person next week for students in grades 3-5. On Monday, our school board unanimously approved the recommendation to return secondary students, in a hybrid model starting on February 22nd, pending county-level case rate data and our ability to successfully meet all of our district's educational delivery model considerations. This school year has and continues to present many challenges that we are working to find solutions for. One of those challenges is the impact of the pandemic on our enrollment. Due to this pandemic, this year we're close to 70 kindergartners under our projection, which has had major staffing and budgetary implications for our district. This year we saw an increase in families choosing to homeschool, choose private schools or charters that had more flexibility in their ability to offer in-person learning for students from the start of the school year. While we hope to regain some of the enrollment as we are able to offer a more consistent in-person experience, we know that enrollment decline this year will have implications for state funding allocations, which will impact our ability to offer a consistent staffing model as we head into next year. In order to mitigate the impact of COVID-19, we would ask that you would allow school districts to use the greater of the 2019 or 2020 pupil counts for general education and compensatory funding. Over the past several months, I've engaged in a lot of conversation about learning loss and gaps as we head into next school year. And while some of that may be true, I would encourage school leaders and state leaders to make sure that we have an accurate sense of where students are as it relates to grade level standards before implementing system-wide interventions. Here in St. Louis Park Public Schools, we're currently seeing growth for students in reading in grades 2-7 as measured by the NWEA MAP test. Specifically, we're seeing reading growth for Black and Brown students whose growth data in reading has been flat or declining for the past couple of years. While we recognize that growth does not necessarily mean students are proficient on grade level standards, we know that during this time of constant change for our students and staff, that we're still making progress, and we also understand this will inform our action as we head into next year. It will be important that lawmakers oppose any new unfunded mandates, as this is truly a time for innovation. One size fits all mandates stifle innovation, creativity, and local control. In St. Louis Park Public Schools, we believe that all students benefit from an education that provides strength-based, culturally relevant enrichment, rather than ones that intervene based on deficits and provide remediation. We also believe that students have untapped brilliance that can be fostered through talent development. So as we head into next year, we're working to minimize and or eliminate the traditional intervention and remedial structures we've developed to support student learning. And we're really working to move in the direction of creating structures that will foster talent development and enrichment. We're currently in the process of rewriting our ATSIS grant application, which are funds that we receive from the state for early intervention. In the past, we've used these funds in a deficit-minded manner, and we know that as we come out of this pandemic, that we will need to create an environment with high levels of student learning that energize and enhance their spirits. We believe that this talent development model will have a positive impact on the social-emotional needs of our students, as it will be asset-based and for all students, not just those that are identified as gifted and talented. So I would like to just take a moment to thank the leaders at the Minnesota Department of Education for their support as we've explored this idea with them. And what they've offered us is that, you know, this is the first time that any school district has come to them for the use of these funds in an asset-based manner as opposed to an intervention or deficit-based manner. So in conclusion, I would just like to thank you all for allowing me a few minutes to share our experience in St. Louis Park, and thank you for your leadership and the commitment that you have to our students in the great state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. And members, as has been past practice in the committee, ask that you hold questions until the panel is completed, and then certainly ask questions of any of the panelists at that time. Next on the agenda is Stephanie Barrage, the interim superintendent of the Robbinsdale Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Stephanie Barrage. And thank you. Hello, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the students and families in the Robbinsdale area schools, as well as other learners across the state. In Robbinsdale, we began the school year in distance learning. We plan to bring our youngest students back in the late fall, but as the COVID cases and numbers increased, we made the decision to remain in distance learning. Last week, we welcomed our pre-K through second grade scholars back, and next week, our third through fifth grade scholars will return. We are hopeful that we will be able to bring our secondary students back in the coming months and continue to plan for that through our internal process. Throughout all of this, we have offered what we call the distance learning plus model, which allows us to bring students to our schools in small numbers to help students and families through our student support centers. This includes help with technology, academic, and social emotional support to provide resources to students and our families to ensure we can meet the students' needs and to be and social emotional support to provide resources. To ensure that we could meet student needs and to be a one-to-one district, we purchased 5,588 iPads or Chromebooks and accessories for a total of $1.6 million. Prior to COVID, we were a one-to-one district for grades 3 through 12. We purchased hotspots because our families needed internet access. We provided meals to more than 1.3 million families in the Robbinsdale area district. There is so much that our students need due to the pandemic, and in order to move forward, social and emotionally, many of our scholars are struggling. We need funding to increase our mental health supports, psychologists, social workers, and mental health therapists. If we had a mental health therapist and a school psychologist in every building, we would have more students being able to have access to licensed professionals to meet their mental health needs. We need VBK funding to continue the educational experience for our youngest learners. We also need priority for additional funding to offer robust summer educational programming and extended learning for the following school year. Professional development dollars to bring back staff early in August to address literacy deficiencies, math, and social emotional learning. We have adopted language essentials for teaching reading and spelling, which is assisting in the development of our teachers to be more knowledgeable, skillful, and effective teachers of reading. We know many of our scholars have lost traction academically. We need our pre-K 5 teachers trained to be able to respond to the academic deficits that our scholars have experienced due to this pandemic. We also need resources to do authentic equity work. I can't stress enough that our students' mental health has suffered during this time, and we will need resources to help them readjust to being a student in a building or if they continue to learn from distance. It is also important that our staff can get vaccines so that they can feel safe returning to our buildings. We need shots, more shots, and even more shots for staff to feel safe. We have learned many lessons through COVID. We must address the persistent inequities between our white and non-white students. Our academic standards for grades must, for all grades, must reflect all students and not just sit in an ethnic studies class. Access to technology is extremely important in the education of children and their families. We must expand our skilled trades and career pathways to include education as we grow our next generation of teachers. We must continue to advocate for funding for our youngest learners. Our enrollment was down by about 800 students across grade levels. We saw it heavy in our kindergarten with our kindergarten students and our lower elementary. Families decided to either homeschool or keep their kids at home. We have more than 1,000 students enrolled in our 281 distance learning school. We also have over 80 preschool students, which are in distance learning too. And that's exciting for us. Our highest point of COVID absences were in the beginning of November. During the first 2 weeks of November, we had 23 staff either out with COVID or having to quarantine because of COVID. This totaled 189 days. From September 8th to December 30th, there were 1,036 staff absences related to COVID. I can't stress how important it is that you are seeking information from districts on these important topics. We know that this generation of students will forever be changed by the impact of COVID, of the pandemic. It is our job to ensure that they are ready for the future and that any setbacks or trauma they experience during this time, that we come back strong and meet their needs. Thank you for asking what we need to help our students get back on track. Thank you to MDE for their support, and we thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, Dr. Barrage. Next, and then we've got one more testifier, and then we will pause for questions as there is some internal structure to the larger panel today. So members anticipate questions you might have for either Superintendent Osei or Superintendent Barrage or Superintendent Krenz. David Krenz, Superintendent of the Austin Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Dave Krenz, Superintendent Austin Public Schools. Thank you, Chair Dabney and members of the committee, and especially to Committee Assistant Sarah Bird for providing preliminary information. Again, as others have stated, we really appreciate the opportunity to share our experiences through this one-time COVID experience. I have with me my administrative team to answer specific questions later on, so please feel free to jot notes and be prepared to, we're prepared to answer any questions you may have. I want to give you a background, an overview of where we've been, and then what our future needs in the near future would be. To begin with, we started school, unlike a lot of districts, in July. We have a balanced calendar, a couple sites that are balanced calendar to start in July. And we were able to open in person with MDH and MDE restrictions within that building, isolating those classes, keeping the students 6 feet apart, masks, et cetera, and very well accepted. So we were in session quite a bit longer than most. Our regular calendar, pre-K 6, was in person starting in September, and our 7-12 students were in a hybrid model. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, Thursday, Friday, Wednesday being a high, distance learning day for all students. We used ESSER monies and CRF monies to purchase iPads for our K-4 students, as we are, we're already one-to-one, fifth grade through 12th grade with laptop computers. We use the Wednesday time for staff development. We use our staff development pre-COVID time to prepare for distance learning. It really prepared us for what took place in November and later in December. We lasted until the November surge. Numbers became untenable. We had staff of more than 50 that were out. Our students were going into the 500 that were quarantined, and we needed to take action and moved into the distance learning after Thanksgiving. But one thing that we were is very well prepared. With the partnership we have with the University of Minnesota to pre-prepare lessons with our families, prepared after the March through May timeframe, we were well structured to address the needs during that timeframe. We did bring all of our students back on January 11th, as that was our original plan, having a model that was acceptable by MDE and our local COVID coordinators. All of our students came back on January 11th in pre-distance learning model. Our enrollment picture is similar to what you've heard before from others. Our enrollment dropped about 177 students from October 2019 to October 2020. We anticipated an increase of between 25 and 30 students. So in total, a loss of about $1.7 million in revenue. Our early childhood anticipated 144 virtual pre-kindergarten students and 64 third grade level pre-students. We ended up with 128 BPK and 57, so down 23 in that department. With the fact that the federal government has allowed us to provide free lunches for all of our students, a key element for future planning and future revenue is that our anticipated free and reduced, which is over 57%, came in under 50%. So a total loss of revenue of $1.3 million there. We continue to have a high special ed needs of about 18% of our student population with a cross subsidy of about $5.5 million. And along with our EEL population of almost 20% of our students, 1,033 kids, and a cross subsidy that costs us about $1.4 million a year. What we've seen is those students who didn't come to us of that 177, that they've moved to our parochial system here in town. Parents have chosen homeschooling or they've gone online to other academies. So that's where we've seen the loss of our enrollment. We do have students who are coming back to us from our distance learning model and are anxious to get back, especially after our distance learning in December. We've seen a tremendous return of our current distance learning students. What we did see also was once we decided to go in person, that our employees, especially our older employees in non-licensed areas, our paras, we lost about 18% of our paras who quit because of age restrictions, and about 40% of our bus drivers retired or resigned due to that fact, which caused a tremendous burden on trying to get our kids to and from school at the start of the school year. Our teachers stayed in place. They really adjusted, even those with health concerns, wanted to be here and wanted to serve our students. In anticipation of these losses, we used our ESSER funds and our CFR monies to hire full-time subs across the board in our custodials, in our pairs, and in our teachers who've helped fill that role. But there are days we still feel the loss in trying to fill positions. We've been able to work very closely with MDH and our local county in terms of keeping our students in class. We believe that that's the key ingredient to a quality education. Even though we upped what we could do in distance learning, we know through our own internal evaluation and assessments that our students still, when they're in distance learning, fail at a much higher rate than our students who are here in person. Even our hybrid students, and the numbers we have had this fall and into the winter, show that once we get the kids here, even the secondary students who are hybrid, they're achieving at the same rate that they did in a full-time capacity prior to the COVID experience. We also know that it'll be increasingly important for us to meet these needs as our students come back to us in a normal setting. So we're looking for extended time multiplier. Instead of the 1.2, can we get more time and more revenue for students as we expand summer school, as we expand resources into the fall? We're looking for opportunities to address those deficiencies that our students will have in whatever area it may be. We also believe that we need to expand the qualifying criteria for our extended time students, making sure that even those borderline students or even exceptional students who need extra help will have that opportunity at no cost to them. Also, the fact that we need calendar and scheduling flexibility, as our students have found that it's not always that 8-to-3 time that works best for them. Some of our students are doing their best work online in our distance learning from 2-to-4 in the morning. Thank you again for this opportunity, and especially note We've been trying to address mental health supports for our students, but with the lack of professionals out there, it's been increasingly difficult, and we're trying our best. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Members, I see several of you have indicated you have questions. Why don't we start with Representative Mueller from Austin, if I remember correctly?
Actually, this is the reason why I raised my hand. I wanted to welcome my former school. Then you're never a former teacher, but this is where I was working. And I worked very closely with Superintendent Krenz and many of the people who are in that room, and cannot say enough good things about Austin. And this is a great place for us to start to look at their creativity and their innovation in schools. And I just want to applaud Austin for their efforts, knowing that I have also been a part of that system. So welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for being here to share your experience.
So, Representative Mueller, you don't want to put them on the spot with some hard, insightful question. You've got the background that the rest of us don't.
You would be, thank you, Chair, but you would be, just as you've seen with many of these other superintendents, this Austin is an amazing school district that fights for every child, and I am so proud to be a part of it. Thank you so much, Chair.
Fantastic. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and as long as Representative Mueller's been praising Austin, I'd like to ask Superintendent Krenz a question, and that would be, could you explain further your relationship with the University of Minnesota, which I think is what I heard correctly, in helping you to be well prepared when you had to do distance learning? Would you just briefly tell us a little bit of detail on that?
Superintendent Krenz.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. We've had a long-standing relationship with the University of Minnesota and their media technology innovation lab, and we've been working closely with them in terms of technology rollout in the district, and we were able to ask them during our preparation time this past summer and this fall to work with us in preparing distance learning classes and lessons as we move potentially into distance learning again, depending on the COVID and quarantine cases that we would see. So we had a cadre of folks from the University of Minnesota being able to prepare lessons and then work and train our staff on distance learning opportunities. So that really prepared us well for that move in December back into distance learning.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Superintendent Krenz, for sharing that with us. That sounds like a relationship that many districts should look into, maybe not only with the University of Minnesota, but with other institutions in our higher ed system. What a great assistance to receive, and then to have them help you design lessons, because, as a former teacher, I know what a challenge it is to prepare lessons when your mode of learning changes. So thank you very much. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to ask Dr. Osai a question.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Osai, welcome. Welcome to all of you who testified and for your information. Would you share with us a little bit more about what you said? You have talked to MDE about focusing on assets rather than on deficit. Is there a strategy you have in place that maybe others could learn from?
Superintendent Osai.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and Representative Erickson. I appreciate you. You are speaking into existence. I'm currently a doctoral candidate, so I have not yet received my doctorate, but I appreciate it.
Well, you're almost.
The more positivity and the more encouragement I can get, it motivates me to work through these final stages of the process. So thank you for that. But yes, absolutely. I can share a little bit more. So as I was referencing ADSIS funding, which, our district, along with I know several other districts, they have access to, and really these ADSIS funds are utilized. They're early intervention funds.
Yes.
And they're used to try to prevent students from getting, going into special education. So as we've been working with the Minnesota Department of Education and looking at that grant funding, what we really want to do is move away from you know, the way that we're currently using it, which is is primarily a pullout model where we're, you know, doubling down on literacy skills and things like that, things that in many respects diminish hope for students. So what we're looking at based on the research of Dr. Yvette Jackson and Dr. Gloria Lassen-Billens, you know, a lot of phenomenal scholars in the area of education, is that we're really trying to just flip that model on its head, and we're moving and looking towards a more of a talent development model. So what that would look like is that we would utilize those access funds, and what we would do is we would increase literacy support for our educators, our teachers, really helping our grade level teachers strengthen their muscles around teaching reading to children. So that would be one way, so that all students are getting access. And then secondarily, we would create what we consider like a specialist course, right? So just like students have art and music, we would create enrichment coaches that would interact with every single student around this talent development model. And that talent development model would be focused on science, technology, human development, arts, and what we would do through that is really try to support students and engage them in things that, you know, that will help them explore their talents, so that as they matriculate through our system, it helps them get a better sense of and strengthens the things that they're good at, but also starts to give them thoughts and ideas about particular potential career pathways, right? So as we move into our middle school and we continue to work on some of that, and then we get into high school and we think about CCR. And so I would suggest that we're really trying to move to more of an enrichment-based programming. So we're still teaching literacy, but it's a little bit different, learning how to read connected to something that you like, as opposed to being pulled out and having to, you know, almost be drilled and killed on phonics, right? Does that make sense? Am I answering your question, or?
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and soon to be Dr. Osai. thank you very much. I thought I heard access to begin with, and then when you said deficit, I thought, oh, maybe you said assets. So thank you very much for explaining that, and what a great innovative idea for use of those funds. You know, to focus on the literacy is especially interesting in light of what learning loss may have occurred during the COVID learning model changes. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. And I hope others will adhere to the great idea that you've brought to us today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Today seems to be the day that we have superintendents who have members on the committee. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and actually, thank you, Representative Erickson. You brought, you got to my question before I did when I came to Superintendent Osai. I just wanted to thank him. I am going to be meeting with him to learn more about the program, and thank you for bringing innovation to our schools and working with MDE, and let us know if there's anything legislatively that we might need to do to make sure that other folks can think as creatively as you do as well, and thank you for really doing hard work to reach all of our kids. I know keeping that reading retention during this time is pretty amazing. So I also had a question for Superintendent Krenz real quickly. I know how hard it must have been to have a lot of students with COVID and families and the changes with your hybrid and going back and forth. And I was wondering, I know you have a really large population of Latinx and community and students. What were some of the ways that you helped, that you worked towards reaching out to those families with translations? And I know it's a lot harder with distance learning for some families. Just what are some of the programs that you put in place to reach out to all of your students?
Superintendent Krenz?
Thank you. Great question. And what I'm going to do is turn this one over to our Executive Director of Educational Services, who heads up all the programs that we have, John Alberts. John?
Good morning, Chair and members. John Alberts, Executive Director of Educational Services for here in Austin Public Schools. We use a number of elements to communicate with our families. First and foremost, we're an integration district, and we receive the integration revenue, which is super important to us, to support what we call success coaches, who are essentially cultural liaisons to families. We have them covering multiple languages, including not just Spanish speaking, but Karen, Kareni, Anahuac, Noor. We also have an increasingly large Pompeian population, which we're also connecting with through our Success Coach program. So every building has a success coach, as well as a number of them that work for the district proper. And so they are really intimately involved with the families and know very well the families and communicate that way. We obviously use our social media. We have a Kareni, one of our Kareni interpreters goes on Facebook Live all the time to help communicate with our families about how they should access programming. And then thirdly, I would say, I know that the legislature recently approved some additional funding for the Cradle to Career programs out in Minnesota. We have one of those here in Austin called Austin Aspires. And that through that program, they've hired a couple of navigators, including a tech navigator to support our families in terms of technology. Because we found that while we were getting technology in parents' hands, for many of them, especially our recent immigrants, that itself is a whole new language of how to negotiate technology. And so we hired a person through that but funding using our Cradle to Career network. And so those are just a number of ways. I could speak probably for the next 10 hours on how we communicate with families, but those are kind of the big ways.
Thank you very much. Representative Joachim, a follow-up to Mr. Albers?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Members, we're now going to shift to a different area of the panel today. I'd like to welcome to the committee Darren Kermes, Superintendent of Intermediate School District 288. Superintendent, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Good morning, Chair Dabney and members of the House Education Finance Committee. My name is Darren Kermes. I'm the Superintendent of Southwest Metro Intermediate District 288. I'm joined by Melissa Shaler, Executive Director of Student Services of Intermediate District 917. Thank you for the opportunity to share what has worked well and where we have seen challenges in the intermediate districts during the pandemic. If we may, Mr. Chair, we would share our time and thoughts today regarding the impact of COVID on the intermediate districts and the students we serve. Intermediate districts and other collaborative units across the state often serve students with disabilities who have disabling conditions so significant that their resident district cannot meet their needs within traditional school buildings or programs. Intensive and specialized staff training becomes critical for the safety of students and staff alike. Sadly, even with training, staff can be seriously hurt. Last year, one of our most promising new teachers suffered a traumatic brain injury and has not yet fully recovered. As parents, we often worry about allowing our kids to play football and hockey due to the risk of head injuries. It never dawned on me that I should consider cautioning my daughter away from becoming a teacher for the same reason. But that's what it feels like it has come to in many regards. Today, we want to share with you some of the successes and challenges we have seen during the COVID pandemic through the lens of an intermediate district. We have gathered input from all four intermediate districts, but I would submit that what you will hear is very similar or identical to the concerns many cooperative units from across the state would share. Melissa Shaler is going to lead that discussion. I would then return to offer some suggested solutions. Over the years, I often hear elected officials ask, what specifically can we do? If that's a question you've been considering, we will provide some specific ideas and proposals designed to directly address this question in light of where our students are in the midst of the pandemic and as we emerge from its shadow. With that, if I could yield some time to Melissa Shaler to cover what's working and where our challenges have been.
Thank you, Superintendent Kermes. Ms. Shaler, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Shaler, and I am the Executive Director at Intermediate School District 917. Today, what I'd like to share with you are, first of all, what we've seen as some success stories during COVID. We have seen marked increases in needs, particularly for mental health, and we face challenges with student engagement and changes to funding streams, including our medical assistance revenue. But we have had unexpected successes. And so some of these are some successful supports for mental health. And we've experienced those particularly in our programs that have had mental health partnered with our educational services, or where we've had partnerships existing with organizations like the Wilder Foundation.
And we've seen particular success in these programs for our elementary age students. Leaders across all Setting 4 programs have really continued to define distance learning experiences for students as they have gathered data on students, and particularly our students who aren't engaging. And we have seen really some alterations and changes to how some of our specialized services like social work are reaching out and meeting the needs of families. They're meeting the needs related to things like food assistance and some of those kinds of things in ways that we haven't been able to or have done in the past. Our teachers have had the opportunity to be more flexible with the educational services that they deliver, and they've got great ideas for post-pandemic innovation, and we're excited for perhaps what next year will bring for us. Students are experiencing success when they're engaging. They've got more personalized support during the pandemic. In many cases, less distraction with environmental factors. We've seen this particularly for our students on the autism spectrum. And for some, online learning has really demonstrated for them increases in their identified goal areas. They've been able to be more focused and more successful academically. All of the intermediates were able to deliver technology and internet access points to our students who needed them. Not all of our students can engage via technology. We've had to use other means, but we've all been able to use resources to engage when we can in that manner. And as a result of that expansion of technology, we really have increased the students' digital citizenship skills and really acquired a broad range of skills, both for our students and our staff with regard to virtual learning. There have been, one of the things that was shared by 287 was a really important success story from one of their students that's participating in their Northern Star online program. This student had success across the board, grades moving from failing into the range of Bs. And I have a testimonial that we can share if there's more time later. We have, though, had challenges in providing education during COVID. Prior to the pandemic, as an administrator in an intermediate school district, we had a great deal of energy focused on a number of issues. Kind of on center stage for us were meeting the needs of our member districts, including having sufficient, well-planned space to meet the needs of the students that they refer to us, recruiting and retaining staff to address the needs of students in our care. Currently, I think, 7 teachers short of what we needed to start the school year. And then also executing innovative programming that allows for growth and development of students. And so this has been things like robust mental health services. And then finally, funding has been a challenge for us in terms of supporting our needs for ongoing professional development for our staff. Given the pandemic, those areas of focus remain, and there's new challenges that have emerged for the intermediates. As we planned and made decisions for serving the students in our care, these are some of the challenges that we faced this year. In particular, meeting the needs of our member districts as they make decisions that have included, in many cases, more direct services than we may be providing as an intermediate. And this is due to the intensive needs of the students that we serve, including difficulties that they may have with social distancing or maintaining safety protocols. Maintaining staffing that allows for in-person programming consistently, given COVID-19 exposure and quarantine requirements. We began the year, each of the intermediates a little bit differently. At 917, we began the year in a distance learning model. We had several closures of our Setting 4 programs temporarily as we dealt with exposure and quarantining. And currently, we went into a distance learning model. And currently, we are moving towards coming back into a full hybrid. We're modified hybrid now, and we'll be back fully, hopefully on February 22nd in a hybrid. And then other challenges we faced are meeting student needs when we're not in person, given challenges with engaging students in distant learning, either whole or part. Also, the switch between models has been challenging for some of our students. We face budget deficits in 287. The amount of their budget deficit is approximately $5 million. All of the intermediates have lost MA revenue due to the lack of face-to-face contact. 287 reports this at $1 million. Our MA revenue in 917 is down about two-thirds from what we would have expected. We have declines in enrollment in programs across the intermediates. We have significant increases in mental health issues of our students. Some of this is an impact of excessive screen time and lack of supervision for our students. And we do anticipate significant increases in mental health when students return. And with that, I would like to turn it back to Darren to review some of the possible solutions.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Ms. Shaler. Superintendent Kermes.
Superintendent, can you unmute yourself?
Apologize for leaving on mute. Thank you, Chair Dabney and members. As Melissa has shared, please bear in mind that some students have performed well and even thrived during COVID and under distance learning and hybrid models, but many have not. Whatever alternative is selected, it must allow for a differentiated approach due to the unique needs and circumstances of each student. A one-size-fits-all model will not be effective as it will challenge some resources to some who do not need them while failing to provide resources minimally needed by others. Second, whatever option is chosen, please make the decision early in the session. Schools and families need time to plan. Schools need time to meet with parents and tailor plans for individual students. And schools need time to secure staff to provide those services. Third, there is no need to reinvent the wheel here. A model already exists in the form of extended school year or ESY services. ESY is required under state and federal law. Districts and families alike are familiar with this concept, and students have benefited from ESY services for years. ESY services are required under three conditions: when a student will experience significant regression during a break in instruction, when services are necessary to attain and maintain self-sufficiency, or given the student's unique needs, ESY services are necessary to ensure the student receives a free, appropriate public education. The vehicle to provide necessary services to students with disabilities already exists under this third option. The legislature could simply explicitly direct that eligibility can be determined due to lack of progress toward annual goals as a result of service models used under COVID. MDE could be directed to define these parameters with input from schools, teachers, parents, and the advocacy community. This model would require three things to work properly. One, time funding for the summers of 21 and 22. Two, an operational definition of eligibility. And three, most importantly, time. Time to develop the definition, time for teams to meet and determine eligibility, and time to hire staff and prepare programs. This cannot wait until the end of the session or for a special session, or we will lose the opportunity to serve during the summer of 2021. Two notes. This model would also work for non-disabled students. Using an individual service plan common in many charter schools and alternative programs and some traditional and middle and high schools. Whichever model is chosen should not be referred to or associated with the term compensatory education. Compensatory education is a term of art. It implies a district violated a child's rights. The Seventh Circuit has recognized that this provision allows district courts to order compensatory education if necessary to cure a violation. Here, a school district may have done all in its power to serve, but the realities of COVID made the necessary service model impossible to implement. The resulting services are necessary to ensure the student receives FAPE, which falls directly within the definition of ESY. In summary, this proposed model works for students with and without disabilities. This model is individualized and recognizes individual differences in terms of needs deriving from the pandemic. This model does not require new legislative standards, just direction to MDE to establish definitions to be applied to an existing program. This model does not operate from a punitive deficit compliance or violation model, but rather from a positive model of addressing and meeting unique needs. This model uses an existing funding line. It just requires an additional allocation during this biennium. And this model does not create a permanent ongoing program. Instead, it establishes a targeted need using an existing model over a reasonable duration. Second proposal that we have is to take action to proactively make schools safer. Keep students and teachers safe by proactively intervening before safety concerns emerges. This involves increasing mental health services and offering specialized teacher training. We have shown positive results from two pilot programs authorized by the legislature in recent years. We ask for the return of that funding and the expansion of these programs to all collaborative units. Second specific idea is to allow extended time revenue for students in all residential treatment facilities. If students in residential and correctional settings dealing with mental health issues are not some of the most at risk and needy students in the state, then who are? MDE's current interpretation is that extended time funding does not extend to these students. We disagree and now seek legislation to expand the current exception allowed for in two facilities in Wilmer, and ask that that be expanded to all similar facilities statewide. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. Members, questions? I see that Representative Jordan has a question. Representative Jordan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was actually for Dr. Burridge from the previous panel. Would that be okay for me to ask that question?
Certainly. Dr. Burridge?
Yes.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Burridge, I was very struck by how you talked about the need for your students and staff and community to have both their physical and mental health needs addressed within a school setting between needing vaccinations and school counselors. Can you talk a little bit about if you think full-service community schools would have an additive benefit for your district at all?
I can. And that is why we were discussing, you asked what were the needs, and those are some of the needs. As I hear from parents and our students, and I heard from a parent just yesterday saying how their child is struggling with the mental health of and needing the support. As a principal previously in Minnesota, I actually had the opportunity to actually have two community schools where that was how it worked. Our parents, schools are like a beacon. Our districts are light for our families. They have relationships with their teachers, with their principals. And so when they have the opportunity to be able to come to the school and to get support, that supports the overall family in how they manage schools. And so yes, that can happen. And that's why I was very specific in that. As our students are coming back, they're going to come back differently. There are different needs that the parents are sharing with us and the students are sharing with us. I meet monthly with our affinity groups to make sure that we're not missing out on any information directly from our families and our students to ensure that we can meet their needs. So that was very specific to say, as they're coming back and they need support, they are going to need that support to manage school and what it looks like as we move forward. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Burridge, do you think your students and your families and the surrounding community will have much more needs as a result of the pandemic and the civil unrest that so many of our communities in the Twin Cities have faced? Do you think that this will really change the needs? Obviously, those needs were there before, but do you think there'll be a greater need for that?
There is definitely a greater need. This has been heightened. And I'm going to also share, I did not share in my comments. I did briefly, but even I'm getting a lot of our parents are coming to us saying, we need to see people who look like us in the schools. And yes, we are an integration school and we have culture and climate specialists, but there is something about seeing a teacher who looks like you in the classroom. Now, does that mean that all teachers. I've been a teacher, and our teachers educate, but there is a connection when you have someone who has your culture and your background that can assist you. So, and that you can talk to, so that can say, point me in the right direction. So yes, we are forever changed. Now, that's a great thing. Let me say this, I always sit in the positive place of, as we sit in this new world of how we educate children, we are going to be innovative. We have made changes and strides even now as we've lived through the pandemic, but we're going to be better because of the conversations that we're having to meet the specific needs of our children. Those issues were there before, they have been heightened based around COVID. So I'm excited about this time that we're living in because it is going to help us change how we educate students and get even better than where we were at before.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question would be for any of the presenters that want to respond. And, you know, Mr. Chair and members, I mean, we've had many businesses throughout Minnesota from this pandemic that have taken losses, that have laid people off. We've got government of all sorts, including our education system, that is now telling us, well, we're going to continue the same expenses, but we need more money because the formula is based on the number of students in our school, and some of them have left temporarily or permanently or whatever. It seems the ability for schools to react and respond and look at the expense side of the equation and figure out how to match the expenses up with the declining revenue because of those students leaving is not very quick or very reactive. What say you, superintendents?
Who would like to take that one?
Chair Dabney?
Superintendent Rosai, yes, thank you.
So I certainly am willing to offer a perspective, and I would suggest that, you know, it is a perspective, it's not the only perspective. And as I think about that question, I certainly recognize the impact on this pandemic, and I believe, you know, businesses were referenced and the impact that it's having on them and their need to adjust or modify staffing levels to meet the needs of their finances. And one of the things that as I think about public education in particular, and I think about the role of public education in the overall success of our democracy, I recognize that certainly we will have to make adjustments. And I would suggest that many of our school districts are in the process of preparing for reductions, right? But what we also know is that if public education is a key factor or a driving factor in the success of our overall democracy, then we must make sure that we protect that at all costs, even in the midst of a pandemic, even in the midst of times in which other parts of our community are having to downsize. Because if we are unable to produce citizens that can positively contribute, then we will ultimately face a much tougher challenge down the road. So I would just offer that as a perspective. I know that it's not the only perspective. And what I will also suggest is that we too are, you know, preparing for the impact of this and really thinking about ways that we can creatively continue to provide students a high level engaging, culturally relevant, supportive experience with less, because we understand that that's just the nature of the beast. But I would offer this group that as we think about the prioritization of our resources, that if we're thinking about the overall success of our economy and democracy, that an investment in public education will ultimately lead us to success down the road. So I'll just offer that as a perspective.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just entertain anyone else who would like to respond. I don't think that anyone is suggesting that we don't prioritize education. This legislature has prioritized education every single year I've been here, and I expect we'll continue to. But the question is it realistic for us to continue the same in each school district? Apparently, I'm not sure if this is the case, but to continue the same structure of of staff when the number of students that we educate has decreased 20% or 10% or whatever those numbers are for a particular school district. In the private sector, I run a small business, and I know others in the legislature do. If you don't have revenue coming in, you need to adjust your expenses in order to make it work, or your business doesn't work. And it's only in government that the behavior seems to be collectively that you just continue with the same expenses and the same, coordinated group of staff or whatever, resources, people, and others, with the hope that the government's going to come and take more money from the people in order to give you the additional money that you were out. At some point, the golden goose.
Superintendent Krantz.
Representative Drazkowski, great question. And
yeah, Mr. Krantz, I should call you Mr. Krantz.
Absolutely. For those of you who don't know, Steve and I go way back to teacher-student days, so it's been a long time. Great question. I think the question needs to be asked, and as school districts, I don't want to leave the impression, and I don't think my colleagues do either, that we're not doing anything. We're doing quite a bit. But we're also being asked to do things that the private sector isn't at this time. We had to provide free daycare for all of our families pretty much in Austin. We had to continue to provide lunches for our students without the financial backing that covered the costs that were there. So all those were our key instruments. But also on the other side, for us seeking other possible revenue sources, we've been out there working partnerships, as was pointed out earlier, with community organizations to help provide support for our families, outside grants to help for, in our case, for families to get connection through Wi-Fi, things that we can't provide as a school district. So we're trying to keep our costs down that way. And the other thing is, statute-wise, we are limited to how quickly and effectively and efficiently we can move to make those adjustments. We are in the middle of making those adjustments for next year. But once the year starts, and we had no idea what those enrollment numbers would be. We did a survey over the summer, hoping this would happen. But once those contracts are given out in July, we can't rescind those. Yes, we could say, people, you're not going to work, but we still have to pay a lot of our staff and make sure that those staff are held harmless during those costs. So it's kind of a balance. It's not that we're not doing anything, and it's not that we expect to be bailed out on this side, but there has to be a balance there somewhere. And that's what, from our standpoint, we're looking for. Thank you. Thank you for the question, too.
Thank you, Superintendent. At some point, we'll follow up on what sort of a student Representative Drazkowski was. Representative Drazkowski, if you will, I'd like to shift to Representative Erickson. I believe you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I put the correction of the acronym to which Superintendent Osai was referring in the chat, so that I apologize for using the wrong acronym, and I did define what it is in the verbiage that goes along with the acronym. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Moving on with the panel now, we have Sheree Johnson, the Executive Director of the Goodhue County Education District. Ms. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Chair Devney, we're actually going to pivot to the next presenter.
And is that Ms. Marcotte then?
Correct.
Ms. Marcotte, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, committee. My name is Deb Marcotte. I'm the executive director for Hiawatha Valley Education District in Winona, Minnesota. and serving member districts, 13 member districts in Southeast Minnesota. And so I am honored to present to the committee today. And I'd like to thank everyone as you continue to support all of our districts during the COVID-19 pandemic to address the needs of students throughout Minnesota. We are asking you to consider allocating a portion of the elementary and secondary school relief, emergency relief two, and the governor's emergency relief two funds to educational cooperative districts serving students to assist with COVID-19 educational impacts. Our request is for consideration in the 10% SR2 funds allocation based on the same percentages each of our cooperative LEAs received in the first round of ESSER funds, understanding that 90% of the ESSER funds are based on federal formulas that cannot be changed by the state. Across the state of Minnesota, cooperative school districts serve our most at-risk populations. Intermediate districts serve the role in the metro area, and cooperative educational districts serve the role throughout rural Minnesota. These cooperative school districts serve organizations of independent school districts and are designed to increase student opportunity through member cooperation. However, the financial impact of COVID-19 has impacted our students, staff, and families heavily. As a cooperative, most of our employees are occupational therapists, speech language pathologists, physical therapists, and many other specialists that work with students at high risk. These staff are unable to social distance and require significant personal protective equipment, which has had a significant financial or fiscal impact on our organization. The SR2 and Gear 2 funding is needed, not only to support students in independent school districts, but also to serve the at-risk populations of students attending or served by Minnesota's cooperatives. Since the beginning of this pandemic, parents have been counting on your leadership to ensure their students can continue to learn in ways that work for them. These funds help us ensure all students who want and need an in-person learning opportunity have access to it. All students and educators need and deserve support for PPE, cleaning supplies, learning materials, and more. We encourage you to do everything in your power to support all students and teachers, no matter what type of school district they attend. Like independent school districts, these funds support activities related to safely reopening schools, continuing instruction, and addressing learning loss, including educational technology and reimbursement for COVID-19 related costs. We implore you to extend the funding to include your students in Minnesota's cooperative districts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Marcotte. Questions from members for Ms. Marcotte or any of the other panelists today? Representative Thompson.
No. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say to Dr. Esteen, he mentioned our youth and our kids being, he talked about investments. And I want to say thank you, because this definitely a true statement. Our children are a very good investment, and we should invest very wisely if we want a good return, you know, on our investments, you know. 4 or 5 years from now, down the line, these kids are going to have to take care of some of us right now on this screen, and we need to invest in them. We should not be cutting anything from, we should be investing more into our youth and these in these schools. And so I want to say thank you to Dr. Asio Esteen for mentioning that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Any other member questions or comments at this time? Seeing none, I want to thank the panelists for coming forward and sharing some of the innovative strategies that they've implemented throughout the pandemic and their vision forward for their students and their staff, and bring some of the needs that they have so that they can fulfill those to the committee. Members, this week, Governor Walz has proclaimed it Paraprofessional Week in Minnesota schools. Representative Joachim, would you like to say a few words about your profession?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I miss my profession. I was not able to work this fall with the students, but I just want to thank all those out there that are working so hard in unusual circumstances, really helping with the pivot to, you know, distance learning, hybrid, in-person, meeting students where they're at. And I want to thank Dr. Barrage for saying and recognizing, and some others on that conversation, that our students are going to come back to in-person school with a lot more challenges than when they left. I think there's going to be a lot more kids that might have ACEs scores that didn't have them before, and families that are just struggling. And our parents are kind of that first line to help those students get what they need and try to settle back in. So a shout out to all those folks out there working really hard for our kids.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Well put. We know how important education support professionals are in the classrooms and in the schools, and most importantly, in the lives of the students. So thank you for that. Members, with that, tomorrow we will have our first bill up, House File 4. Representative Hassan will be bringing that to us. It does speak to many of the issues that were brought forward by this panel today. And I look forward to seeing you all then and our deliberations at that time. With that, members, we are adjourned.